Messi fans, Lowe's Messi Halftime Event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a MyLowe's Rewards or a MyLowe's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messi moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messi Halftime Event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What's Next with Lacey, the podcast where I play your slightly unhinged career mentor and share the advice that you were probably 2 seconds away from asking ChatGPT for anyway. This week, I am joined by the incredible Allegra Ponte, and we had such a good conversation. We talked about her job hunt. You know how I love talking about job hunting, her career pivot, and all the interesting and varied work that she has done so far leading up to this point. There's a bit of behind the scenes honesty, it wouldn't be What's Next without it, about what it actually feels like to be in this in-between stage. Sending applications, rethinking everything, trying to stay confident while also mildly spiraling. You know, all those fun things. We also bonded over our shared solution to career uncertainty. When in doubt, start a podcast. Allegra recently launched her own podcast, Stan, which is available wherever you get your podcast. She shares more about it in our conversation, but I really, really recommend listening. And yes, maybe you might hear a familiar voice over on that podcast soon. So go check it out. I cannot recommend it more. We covered all of that, as well as the emotional side of job searching, practical tips that helped her and helped me, and how to keep the momentum going when things feel a little stalled and a little tough. So if you're job hunting, if you're considering a pivot, or you are toying with the idea of building something of your own, then this one is certainly for you. But even if you're not, it is still worth a listen. Allegra is sharp and thoughtful and very funny, and genuinely, it was just such a fabulous conversation. As always, please, please, please send this episode to anyone who needs it, or honestly, just anyone, because I really appreciate every single listen. So with that, here's Allegra. Allegra, welcome to What's Next. I am so happy to have you here. I know we've been chatting for so long already, so that was like a really random, just like interject, let's start.
You got to start somewhere. Yeah, it's myself. Unfortunately, as soon as I pick up the phone, I'm like, oh my God, how are you?
No, I love it, as it should be. It's going to be such a great interview when it's always just so easy to just chat and get into the flow of things. And immediately off the bat, we just got into such a deep conversation and... and missed the chance to record it. So we'll start it now. But anyway, welcome. I am so excited to have you here and talk through your career, your podcast, your journey, everything. There's a lot to learn about you and so many interesting things, like we just said. There's so many interesting things.
It has been a journey. I did not think that my life was going to end up this way. And I think I've just been hopping from one thing to the next, and it's been really, really exciting and quite odd. And I never think it's that odd until someone asks me to explain it to them. And I'm like, oh, this doesn't sound that great. Very mismatched and a bit confusing. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I so feel that. I was just updating my resume and I was like looking at all my work and I like kind of sat back for a second and I was like, what have I done? Like what... What is this like entertainment and now the work I do now and this my podcast? Or like it just was like a zigzag on my resume and I was like, oh, okay, well, here we are.
It's such a, first of all, I think it's such an our generational thing. But then as well, like every single person who I've spoken to in their 40s, 50s, whatever, who are like quite senior have said your 20s and your early career is just about going and doing like the most random opportunities and like whatever comes your way saying yes. And that's the only way that you're going to learn and find out how to do things and what you like. And I've had so many friends like pick up a random job and be like, I had no idea that like car batteries were my passion, but I just took this job and here I am. And I'm like, go off, sis.
If that becomes your passion, then that becomes your passion. No, absolutely. I do agree with that for sure. Like your 20s are a time to explore and you've so little riding on it. Like you have no one dependent on you yet, maybe, I don't know, but no one dependent. You've got a little bit more flexibility. So it is the time to explore, but also it's kind of like, tough when you're seeing others do different paths and you're like, should I be doing that path instead?
So having left consulting, because I went into consulting, not to like jump into the middle of our conversation, but I went into consulting basically to pursue a much more stable path. And after bouncing around and doing different things, like the idea of, okay, at the end of this year, I might get a promotion, or like, you know, being staged so specifically, like with consulting, at the end of every project, you get like a rating of where you are. And so that sort of clarity was really, really attractive to me. And when I left, I felt so like, at what position do I apply for? Because I'm doing a bit of a pivot right now. And would I be happier doing this? And I get stressed out. And then people are like, yeah, but remember how unhappy you were when you were doing that. Like, I'm like, oh my God, imagine if I stayed. And people are like, yeah, exactly. Imagine if you had stayed. Like,
yeah,
you would be desperately unhappy. So the grass is always green on the other side, and there's always pros and cons to everything. But like, I know in myself, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I think for you as well, like taking on such a trajectory, like has a security to it, but a security that can be quite suffocating.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm kind of on more of that like stable path now, but yeah, it's something I think about a lot. And indeed, there's pros and cons to everything. So I'm still trying to fill out the pros and cons list, I think, to see what I do next. But
yeah,
let's turn to you. You just mentioned you were doing a pivot. Let's talk about that. So you are on the job hunt. What kind of role, if you know, what are you looking for? And like, having come from the world of consulting, what are your non-negotiables for your next job?
So I am on the job hunt. I'm also freelancing, which is like a great way of, I don't know, filling in those gaps and doing things. Mm-hmm. But as much as freelancing has been fun and taking on new projects has been fun, it is the lack of stability is another thing. And also like the lack of private health insurance and things,
yeah,
is really tough. So I'm currently on the job hunt. I'm quite flexible on what I'm doing. I just know I want to work somewhere a bit more creative. And this is surprising for me, but I thought I wanted to work somewhere remotely. But then after my last job, so in consulting, I got put on a remote project and I ended up being remote for like 7 months or something. And yeah, it was really, and especially at the beginning of your career, when you don't know that much, it really showed me how difficult it is and like how much you rely on someone to train you properly and have someone there to answer your questions when you're not sure. But also, and I didn't think I was like this at all, but I miss the camaraderie of being in a team. Like, I am the chattiest person alive, and you can be going through a hellish period at work, but as long as you and your coworker can make each other laugh, it's a lot more, like, it does so much more for you than I think I realized.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do a, you know, more in-person role. And I've had some real shockers in the past with teams and bosses. So I essentially have turned down jobs in this job hunt where, and I've been super lucky to do this because I had a lot of savings coming out of my last job because I was in Dubai and I was doing a consulting job. But I've turned down positions where I've gotten very bad feelings from the team. One of the places I just got an offer from, the gentleman in one of the final round interviews said it was for a position in the Middle East. And he was like, you know, you sound American and you've got a very sweet face. And he was like, are you sure you're ready to move to the Middle East? Cause I just like, don't think you're ready for it. And I was like, well, first of all, you obviously haven't read my CV cause
I've already been there.
I've lived there for like 3 years. But second of all, I was like, well, what do you mean? And he was like, well, you know, I just can't deal with another sensitive one. Like, don't tell me. He was like, I mean, don't tell me you're a crier. And I was like, well, I am actually. I was like, oh no, I'm so sorry. Yeah, no, I am a crier. But he was like, oh, you're not one of those criers, are you? And I was like, how often have you made someone cry?
That needs to even be a question.
Yeah, that's like, asked this question in the interview. And then with other members of the team, I kind of voiced my concerns or my doubts, and they didn't allay them at all. In fact, they spoke in a very demeaning manner about like other members of the team. And so after that job process, like despite the fact it was a lovely offer, I was like, I just think it's not that I'm not able to like tough it out. It's just that like, I don't have the patience for that anymore. And I've realized how deeply like a team can affect your work, especially like I am a hard worker. I know I'm a hard worker. We went to college together. Mm-hmm. I feel very self-motivated. I've always been one to study. I've always taken a lot of pride in my work, but there's nothing worse than being like in consulting, locked in a boardroom at 3 a.m. and being with someone who is not being respectful, is being a sad sack, is being nasty, is getting too stressed. Like it just completely changes the experience. It can go from being like a fun bonding experience to just like a hideous soul crushing situation. Yeah. So yeah, that's what I'm mostly... That was a very long answer to a very short question.
But also so valid and a great place to start. I think that, you know, when sometimes you are making a pivot or you are on the job hunt, you do get to a point where it's like, okay, I'll just take anything. But like, that may not be the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Because yes, you need something, but like a job is everything. Like it is the people you are spending the most amount of time with.
Yeah.
And so you need to like the people who are around you, and you do sometimes forget that you can choose that is like part of a job search that you do have control over. And so like, that is, I'm well done. I think that was a great decision to suss that out and make that choice for yourself. Because indeed, I also have worked in some very crazy, crazy teams, and it just can make or break you for sure.
Absolutely. And you can learn so much from people, and you can learn to really resent and like despise something that you used to love because of the people associated mm-hmm. with it. Currently, as I said, I'm freelancing in an office, and there are two teams there. There's a design team and there's another team that I'm working with. And the design team are so close, and they seem to really love each other. And I don't know when this episode's going to come out, but it's around Christmas time. So mm-hmm. yesterday they were all giving each other Christmas presents, and they went out to their Christmas lunch and they did this activity together. And one of them left to go on holiday with their family, and they were all hugging him goodbye and being like,
"Oh, that's so nice."
And I started to get quite emotional because I was like, oh my God, I wish I had that. Like, I wish I was part of a team that was like that. And it gave me like a real fortification in my choice to really prioritize the types of people that I'm working with.
No, it is so important. The team that I work with now are just like absolute angels. And it's like, so it was coming from the world of entertainment, which is so known for being brutal. Like mm-hmm. it was just crazy to me that everyone was so nice and supportive. I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
I don't know this world.
Yeah. Today, with this freelancing, I was doing this task and blah, blah, and I'd gotten the brief and then I'd finished the task. And then she mentioned something that I hadn't considered. I was doing this big research thing, and she was like, oh, cause you know, blah, blah. Like you were supposed to bring out one aspect of the research, but it hadn't been clarified in the brief. Mm-hmm. And because of my previous experiences, I felt like panic rising in my throat. And I was like, I'm so sorry, that wasn't clear. And I had misinterpreted something that she'd said when we were discussing what I was doing. And I started to get like, I could feel panic coming on. And she was like, it's really not a big deal. Like, my whole body, I was like, you're so right, it isn't a big deal, but I've been so scarred by previous experiences. And like you said, like your work is where you spend so much of your time. So if you're in 8 hours a day in panic response and terrified of doing anything wrong, you're never going to learn, you're never going to ask questions, you're never going to grow, and it's just it's horrendous.
So I mean, So true. So important. Like, but it's like so important to say, and I think that isn't discussed enough, that like just workplaces just sometimes are not putting enough effort into like actually creating a proper respectful workplace community. But we could talk all day about that.
Yeah.
But
Sorry.
Talk me through your process so far. Where have you been finding jobs? Where did you find your freelancing job? Have you found any like surprising resources that have been useful during this time?
I found my freelancing literally, and I hate people that say this because it's one of those really annoying truths, but through networking. It's the most painful thing. And especially when you're quite proud and you've had your ego bruised, like it's very difficult to go up to people and be like, I'm looking for work, I'm looking for advice, I'm looking for this. I found my current freelancing position through like three different introductions, as in one person introduced me to another, to who introduced me to another. And you never know what's going to happen. It was initially just a conversation over the phone. And then she emailed me a week later and was like, I actually need you to come into the office and do something and I'll pay you this amount. So you never know where your next opportunity is coming from, especially with how violently bad online applications are these days and how difficult recruiters are finding, like finding the right people. One thing, I hate AI, but I have used this resource called Jack and Jill AI, which you have a conversation with it. It's like a chat bot, but you speak to a thing, AI agent, I guess. And they ask you a bunch of questions like, where would you consider moving? What, like, is it important to you? Like, you can say to them, like, I really need to be in a good team, or I really need to work remotely, or I really need to, you know, I really want to focus on the strategic aspect of the job, or really whatever. And then it sends you a list of jobs that match your criteria every week. And they're not necessarily advertised on job boards. So
no way.
Yeah. So it like goes through all the job boards, but it also goes through like company websites and things. And then you can log back in and you can talk to the agent and be like, actually, thanks so much for sending me these, but actually I really prefer to go in a more creative direction, or I've decided I can't move to New York, or I can't whatever. And then it takes that feedback on. It's an iterative process. So as much as I hate recommending AI because of how it's destroying our planet, I also have guilty been using it and have found it quite helpful.
That sounds incredibly helpful. I wish I had that for my career search. Yeah, because there is nothing worse than going through a million job boards or a million LinkedIn posts, not posts, but like, yeah, I guess job posts, and them being like months old without you realizing it, because LinkedIn reposts things and says posted 2 days ago, when reality the job's from like months ago. Or there's so many issues with online job hunt that actually sounds so helpful to kind of streamline your search. So Jack and Jill AI is what it was
Jack called. And Jill AI. So yeah, there have been other things, like I've been offered to do AI interviews, and I have drawn the line at that. Like, I feel, I don't know, like I know everybody's at different stages in their job hunt and people are willing to put up with certain things. But for me, I was just like, I can't contribute to this. Like, I'll be a stick in the mud and I can't contribute to the way that this is going. Like, I have to believe that there is a better solution than this.
You have to believe. And then they're just, I mean, all these companies are using AI or even taking away jobs because of AI.
Exactly.
So there's that as well. But yeah, again, a conversation we could dive into. But I just love that we just keep getting into these really deep and serious topics. But I want to know more about your career pivot. You were coming from consulting. You want to go into creative. Like, where did that idea come from that you wanted to go into something more creative? And what have you really been doing to try and learn about an industry you may not have known about that much beforehand?
So I think it became more creative because I think, you, like you were saying, this is kind of our creative outlet. Like, we both have podcasts, and I've started to realize that that's like what really brings me joy in my life, and having my own ideas and talking about them I think I had a particularly nasty go of it in the consulting world, just because I got unlucky in the nature of how consulting works in terms of being assigned towards different projects and things like that. So I think I had held on to this idea that if all else fails, I could go into the corporate world and just like take a, this is seems really dismissive of the corporate world, and it's just my own experience, but take a more comfortable job, take that security, take, you know, knowing what you're going to do every day and the formula of knowing the goals that you've got to reach and all of that. And I think that slightly blew up in my face. And so I took it kind of as a sign from the universe that this isn't the path that I'm supposed to be taking. And I started writing again, and I started reading again. And one of my teachers, my professors at school, told me, if you don't become a writer, I'll be really cross. And
wait, I love that.
And I had just given it up because I didn't see a future in it. And I think I was really nervous about where that might take me, or not having the financial security or not, whatever. And I think, unfortunately, and this is another thing that we can get into, is with the economy the way that it is and with the encroachment of AI, nothing seems like it's going to give you any security, unfortunately. I know so many people who are fabulous at their jobs who have been laid off just because mm-hmm. of circumstance, or not being able to get the funding, or, you know, their company decided to invest in AI rather than keeping their role, or there are so many things, and it's impossible not to take it personally. And I would encourage anyone who that's happened to not take it personally. But I think in my experience, which was like adjacent to that, I realized like you can't control and you can't choose safety, unfortunately, in the world that we live in. And so you may as well just be doing something that you are excited about. And the thrill that I got from writing and creating my own things made me happier than I'd been in years. And I was just like, this seems to be where the universe is telling me to go right now, which is probably not great career advice, to be like, just go where the universe tells you.
No, I think that's great career advice. And you know what's so funny is I actually kind of told someone the same thing yesterday. And I'm kind of wondering if it's because we're coming from these times of uncertainty in our career.
Yeah.
And I too had this like backup plan in my mind, in like I was in entertainment. I was like, well, I can always go indeed the corporate route. I can always have a backup mm-hmm. and or go back to school. And I always had that in mind. And I think it kind of crept up. And so that's why I did leave entertainment, because as soon as the going got tough, which it got tough and for various other reasons, but like there was a backup plan. There was something there that my brain could jump to that would give me that security. And so I think you're so right. I think doing what you want and doing what makes you excited is incredibly important mm-hmm. because you can try and go the backup plan, but there is no guarantee it will work out. There is no guarantee that it will continue to work out the longer you go down the path. So why not just do something that you love if it's equally as uncertain?
There's also something to be said about like, so in consulting and the work that I was doing in the region that I was doing it, it requires 12 to 16 hour days frequently. And I think there's something to be said about, for instance, like I'm doing this freelance job, it's 9 to 5, and I still have hours when I get home to draw, to record a podcast episode, to do whatever. So if you don't feel like you're committing yourself full time to your creative endeavors, if that's what you want to do, and you're just kind of tiding yourself over and then doing what makes you happy in your free time, like don't feel bad, don't feel like you're supposed to be quitting your job and like going all in. There's always a balance and there's always a way to make it work. But yeah, I could, in my experience in the corporate world, I was working 16 hour days. And even when I got to the weekend, I was just too exhausted to do anything other than sleep. So through that specific experience, I'm like, if I'm not getting the security or the pros of what I thought this situation would bring me, I'm not going to stay for the cons.
So then I know that the job hunt is incredibly hard. So aside from your creative projects and your podcast, which we'll get to, what are some things that you're doing to just kind of keep yourself sane and keep yourself like happy? It's a genuine question because it was a real struggle for me. And I know talking to other unemployed people that it is a real struggle. So what do you do to keep yourself sane?
Yeah, it's, oh my God, it's such a struggle. And if you are listening to this and you're unemployed, I see you. It's fine. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who have never been unemployed and they're seeing me, you know, I'll text them and be like, do you want to go for coffee or whatever? And they're like, oh, I wish I could spend my days going for coffee. And I'm like, no, it's not, you know, it's not what you think it is. Even having picked up this freelance job, unfortunately, the way that my mind works is that I'm a lot more productive when I have things to structure myself around. And I'm a big believer in everything takes the amount of time that you give it. So if you've given yourself the whole day to go to the gym, you're going to take the whole day to go to the gym. But if you've given yourself an hour after work, you're going to take that hour and do something else. And unfortunately, I've been conditioned, having been grown up, like having been raised in a capitalist society, that productivity is self-worth. So not being productive is extremely tough. And then on top of that, not being motivated to feel productive because you're feeling sad, or in my case, you've got mental health issues or whatever, it all just compounds. So yeah, I feel you. It is really tough. The things that I can say is you will never regret exercising, even if it's just going for a walk. I've rediscovered swimming and it has been an utter joy. And every time I feel like I'm on the edge of like, whatever, if I call my mom and I'm in floods of tears, she's like, oh my God, go for a walk. Like a 20 minute walk, your life will change. And unfortunately, she's right.
I know.
Also think two other things. You will never, similarly to exercising, you will never regret investing in your community. Like that's always, always helpful. I had a hideous week where I had my dream job final interview, didn't get it. And immediately I organized a dinner with my friends and I invited them to my house and I made a huge meal. And they were like, why did you do this? And I was like, I was feeling sad. And I genuinely feel like the best way to get yourself out of a funk is doing something for someone else and getting out of your own head a little bit.
You are a lot better than me. When I didn't get like what I was so excited about, I was final round, didn't get it ultimately. I didn't see a soul. Like I couldn't do anything. I couldn't like function as a human. I was like, it was so embarrassing. I was like crying so loudly in my apartment. My roommates and my roommate's parents were there. It was like super awkward. But anyway, I am so impressed with your ability to like cook and host people. I truly just like got on the subway, crying. A guy who I never get offered a seat. A guy was like, are you okay? Do you need to sit down? Because I was just like sobbing so much and I was like, I'm okay.
No, I
so that is that. Incredibly impressive.
I think it's you have that moment first. Like, of course I had that time. I think I got the email at like 11 a.m. I was at my parents' house and my dad cracked out the tequila as soon as he saw my face because he was like, you need a drink. Like you, because I was inconsolable. But I think that sadness stays with you for weeks. And so to get yourself out of that funk and like bringing people together and having a conversation, like we as a society are so isolated and so lonely. And of course that sadness is going to hit twice, three times as hard when you're by yourself. Like you will never regret feeding a friend, doing, you know, getting coffee for a friend, going for a walk. I promise you, you will feel so much better. And then the last one is that like knowing that the path is never, ever, ever easy. And someone said this to me in college once, I was like crying over finals or some shit like that, which is perfect to my point. Like it felt so huge at the time. And now I look back at it and I'm like, what the fuck was I so stressed about? And they were like, think about all the times in your life that you've been stressed and then think about all the times where it's been irretrievably bad and like you haven't learned something or you haven't salvaged anything out of the situation and it's none.
Yeah.
You're gonna be fine. It's just a setback, girl. It's it is what it is. So yeah, that's how I'm finding joy. But it's fucking hard. Like, it is really difficult. And it's even harder knowing that people think that you are just like swanning around, taking walks, going for coffees, you know, applying in cute little cafes. Like, no, it's tough.
I had someone say that to me when I was unemployed. I also had someone say, wow, you're actually telling people you're unemployed? And I was like,
ew.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I'd be so embarrassed.
What?
I was like, what? it was at some event that I was at where I didn't really know people, and I was just kind of talking to people because that's how, you know, it wasn't with someone that I knew because they would have known that I was unemployed. But yeah, he just straight up was like, wow, I'd be so embarrassed. I wouldn't be telling anyone. I was like, okay, well, that's you. I'm me and I share everything. So, and
like a normal person. Yeah. Also, like
a normal person.
It's nothing to be ashamed of. Like, it happens to everybody.
Truly.
It can also be for a million reasons. Like, you could have quit your job to care for a family member, or, mm-hmm. you know, because you had, God forbid, an abusive boss or whatever. Like, you could have gotten laid off because your job was taken over by AI. There's so many reasons. There's no shame in it. It happens to everybody. And this, unfortunately, this person, first of all, it's going to happen to them, and they're going to be shocked. Because mm-hmm. it might not be anything that they've done. It's not like they've messed up. But also, they're going to feel like they have no one to talk to about it because they've created this weird self-imposed shame.
Yeah.
And it's like, anyway, my biggest pet peeve is being judgmental. And it's one of those things as well where I have such a big social anxiety of people, you know, of course people aren't thinking of you that way. And like, you would never think that way about someone else. So like, why are you anxious about it? And then you meet someone who fulfills all of those things that you've been telling yourself that that you think are ridiculous. And it just sends you spiraling again. But like, yeah, that man is the odd person out. He's not everybody.
Totally, totally. No, I will say, I think I was deep enough in my unemployment that I was just like, I couldn't give a crap what you were saying to me right now. But I have so many other things to worry about than your opinion of me and me telling people about my unemployment. But yeah, crazy.
Messy fans, Lowe's Messy Halftime Event hits July 19th. That's coming up fast, so now's a really good time to become a Mylo's Rewards or a Mylo's Pro Rewards member. Join for free and get access to exclusive Messy moments and epic surprises. Let's just say halftime's looking different this year. Make sure to follow Lowe's on TikTok and tune in to the Lowe's Messy Halftime Event on July 19th. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit lowes.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Moving on to like way more fun topics. Let's talk about as fun as talking about this I love to talk about being unemployed. But and as useful as it is, let's talk about your new podcast.
Oh my God.
Why don't you tell us about it, where the idea came from, how are you finding it?
So the basis of the podcast is that it's like seeking to explore obsessive parasocial relationships with celebrities and fictional characters, particularly those that we engage with when we were younger, and how they shape us and why we're drawn to them and how they influenced our lives and what they represent. And so essentially the structure is we take one cultural phenomena, like be it a character or a singer like Taylor Swift or like a book series, and then we spend 2 hours talking about, well, not 2 hours, it is 2 hours, and then I edit it down to one, talking about their cultural significance and the personal significance for that other person. And there are a million reasons why I set it up. I think as a child I was definitely someone with like very, very big feelings, and I can and will emotionally connect to a brick wall, like given half the opportunity. So when I read books, because I was a voracious reader, I still am, I felt so overcome with emotion, and I would make myself feel crazy because I'd be like, why am I obsessed with this person, and why does it feel so real to me when I know rationally that it's not? So it was that, like, on a personal level. And then also I studied anthropology at college, and I've always been really interested in how society is structured. And I think with social media and the internet and, like, the mass commercialization, commodification of literally every single thing, including ourselves, it just made so much sense, and it linked to so many things about, like, why celebrities will have different skincare brands, or why we are so lonely as a generation, or why Gen Z is having less sex than other generations, or why people are falling out of work and they're not, you know, having the same loyalty to companies. Like, that it seemed to encompass so many things about our society as it is. But essentially it was triggered by one of my friends. Like, the final pushing over moment was one of my friends was talking about how she used to be so obsessed with the TV show that she used to wake up at 5 a.m. before school, and whenever they had a new episode, watch the episode, go to school, watch it again, and then spend all night on Reddit forums about, like, wow, the episode and the fantasy world that they were in. And I was like, that's such a deep connection. And talking about why she had felt that way and, like, what stage she was in her life that she had felt such a deep connection or desire to escape into another story. And I was like, I feel like people need to know about this. And so that's what started it.
An incredibly good idea. And I've listened to some of it, and it is, you do such great. You are, what? Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing. I'm like, it's one of those things that it's so easy. And I'm sure you feel this way too, being behind a microphone, is that you do something, you record something, you create something, and then you put it out into the universe, and it feels like you're, like, releasing it. And when someone receives it, they're like, I've been in work interviews, job interviews now, where they're like, oh, we found you through your podcast. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, wow.
Yeah. That happens. Yeah, it happens. But I love when people do that. I mean, I get really nervous that it forms some opinion of me, and that, like, they don't love it, and that they think some way about me because of my podcast.
Yeah.
But then I kind of remind myself, oh, I actually just love this and do it for me and more than anyone else. So, like, they can think what they want. They can, like, say what they want about it. They can do whatever. But then I'm just like, ultimately, it's about me. And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But you do such a good job. It is a really interesting podcast. And yeah, I'm so curious about your process in terms of, do you... you find your guests, you find their, like, childhood obsession or obsession now, whatever it may be. How do you then decide on what to link it to? Like, what, not phenomenon or, like, moment in their life or something like that, do you link it to?
First of all, I want to say I feel exactly the same way about your podcast. I listened to your episode. I was listening to the TV writer episode as well, and I was, like, learning so much. And I think that's also such a beautiful thing about podcasts, is that you do end up learning so much. Like, they are so educational, and you almost, like, find out what you don't know, and then you find out more about it. And I think that's really lovely.
Thank you. Look at us.
Look at us creatively.
Look at us complimenting each other on our great podcasts.
I think it started off, I issued an open call. There were some really obvious ones that I felt like I needed to talk about. Like, Taylor Swift has such a dedicated fandom, and one that I got swept up into just before the Eras Tour. And I was so confused as to, like, what was happening to my body and my mind as I became someone who was really obsessed with her. So I wanted to have a conversation about that. I read a lot before I started recording, which I don't know whether I would recommend to anyone who's looking to start one, because I feel like for me, it was just, like, some of it was really helpful and some of it was just procrastination of being like, it's so scary and intimidating just to hit record. And yeah, I also, as much as I'm a talker, I feel like I'm quite a good listener, hopefully. And I like to ask questions. I like to think about people. When I was in uni, I did a lot of research for anthropology. Like, I published my own papers and things. And a lot of that is just based off of interviews where they don't necessarily have a structure. It's just like follows on from what the person says. And so it's very tangential, but also my last thing, and this is so obvious when I say this, you're going to be like, yeah, that makes sense. I often have like three different thoughts in my mind at once, which is why I'm answering these questions and being like, and also. So as someone speaking, it's impossible not for me not to make the connection and be like, well, that really connects to exactly what I was thinking about consumerism and blah, blah. So, yeah.
Just means that you must need to know so much about our world, our systems, like, you know, like social dynamics, and also about, you know, what their obsession was. Like, yes, you are a fan of Taylor Swift, but like maybe your guest is a fan of something that you don't know. Like, so... it's just so impressive the amount of knowledge you need to have for this.
Well, I think it's not, first of all, the thing that I love about podcasting is that it's so informational, but it's also so personal. And it kind of reminds me of like college, for instance, which was a period I loved learning in, wherein your professors were teaching you about things, but they were also relating it to their own research and their own life. And like I said, I did anthropology. And so a lot of the time people would be teaching you things, but talking about how they discovered it whilst doing their own field work. And so I think that's just like such a beautiful medium of being able to relate to something to someone else, but also like learn something and open your mind while you're doing it. That was so corny, but it's fine.
It was great.
And then on top of that, I think I were so saturated with popular culture, especially if you're on social media, it's kind of impossible to escape. And that was one of the things that came up in the episode about the Kardashians, is that even if you don't follow the Kardashians, you know who they are. Like, you can't pretend, you know what I mean? Like, these relationships are so deeply entrenched in the way that we interact with one another, and not, celebrities are so central, especially in America and the UK, to how we communicate and how we bond and how we like share our values and all of these things. And so it just seemed like a really good jumping off point to talk about everything, I guess. But my sister-in-law was saying, because I, you know, I promote it a lot on social media, and all of the videos are me talking about one thing or another. Like, I saw this advert today on the tube and it made me think of this and this and this. And she was like, how do you think about it? And how do you come up with what to say? And I was like, this is what I mean about the joy of doing something creative, is that I felt like something like a waterfall, like it was hard to stop. It was hard to, and that's why I was like, oh, I feel joy for the first time in such a long time, because I'm allowing myself to have original ideas and thoughts rather than completing a task that was handed to me by someone and I didn't really understand what it does. And so that's what I meant about like the fun of creating something, and it doesn't necessarily have to be good, but it feels good to me. And
no, that makes total sense. I kind of so relate to that. It's like when I'm planning an episode, the questions just kind of come out, because genuinely it's just like what you're curious about as well. And so it's so easy to kind of plan, because you just have that innate curiosity already within you, and you have those thoughts already, and you have those links in your head already, and you've been thinking all this way, like thinking about this probably for a long time, and now you're just actually just pressing record. And so that's why it seems to come so natural to you. But I want to know how you found the podcasting process in general. Starting a podcast is really hard, but how have you found it? What's been the biggest challenge, and what have you found the most fun?
The biggest challenge, like you said before, is thinking that people are thinking about you. I think I've always been like really, unfortunately, speaking of my old professor who told me that I should be a writer, I have always wanted to separate myself very much from things that I create. But every single time I've written something, everybody always says in my workshop groups, they're like, oh, it sounded like I was reading in your voice. Like your voice was coming to me in my head. I was like, so I think kind of leaning, finally giving into the idea that you're putting something of yourself in it was really difficult. And then with that, knowing that once you've allowed yourself to be in it, you've also allowed yourself to be judged, which was, you know, really difficult. But again, like I said before, you have those social anxiety thoughts where you're like, oh my God, everyone's going to think I'm so weird. And then you soothe yourself, or I soothe myself by being like, no one's thinking that much about you. But because we're all the protagonists in our own lives, right?
Yeah.
But then I have had some confirmations. I had a confirmation like 2 weeks ago where someone essentially said to me at a drinks, like, yeah, we make fun of your podcast behind your back. Yeah. And I was like, cool. But as I walked away from it, I was like, I actually, like, it was kind of the most liberating thing that I could have heard. So I was like, I actually just don't care. Like you said about, you know, the guy talking about your unemployment. I was like, I actually just, I'm not trying to impress you.
Yeah.
Your opinion does not matter to me. And also if you're the type of person who would be that nasty, I'm not that interested in what you think. So totally. It was kind of the worst and the best thing that's happened in that situation. Because it's like this whole process has been very much like a process of accepting yourself, I guess.
Yeah. 1000%. I could not agree more. It is such a vulnerable thing to do, to put like a product of yours out there and not have some, you know, big platform to like stand up on and like defend you from anything like that. So yeah, you know, you're going to be talking about it to like people and they're going to have opinions. And yeah, if they're going to say that to your face, I'm sure people are making fun of my podcast behind my back, but I'm like, if they're going to say that to your face, like that is not someone I need to be
talking to
or listening to. And I'm going to keep making my podcast just to prove you wrong, give you more content if you really need it.
I also, like, it was really nice because it was something that I had in the back of my mind, like, oh my God, what if this happens? And then when it happened, I literally just like laughed. And I was like, that's really, my thought process was like, that's really sad that you...
They're probably also just jealous that they didn't do it themselves. Like that they could never do something like that themselves. So that's the only reason people would honestly. At least that's what I tell myself.
That's what I tell myself also. And Delulu is the Salulu. Like I genuinely, it was such a thing that I had such an insecurity about it. And then as soon as someone said something, it kind of like, it felt like the spell was broken. And I was like, okay, so now the worst thing has happened. Like now I can do whatever the fuck I want. So yeah, it was great.
And unlock more like creativity and freedom and all of that.
Yeah, and being less, I'm like, whatever. You know, sometimes I post on my LinkedIn as well. And people from my old job have been seeing me post things about Kim's vaginal wig on LinkedIn. And then I get a notification being like, your old boss from... your consulting has seen your profile. And I was like, this is hideous. And then I was like, you know what? It's actually not that bad. It's fine. Like,
it's not that bad.
Yeah, welcome to the world. Like, scenario, we're okay. Yeah. Like, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, totally fine. And then, so obviously you are in the early stages, but what would be your dream scenario for your podcast or any of your creative work that you've been able to really focus on during this time?
I think my dream, my vision board is to be, and this came to me like recently, I would love to be a mixture of Amelia de Moldenberg and
love her
David Sedaris, the writer. I think they're both. I'm scared of David Sedaris insofar as I think I never want to meet him because I just adore him too much.
Yeah.
If you're out there listening to this, stay away from me.
Oh, I wish I could say that he was. that would be hilarious. I doubt it.
Yeah, you know, I always, when I'm making videos and things, I like when we talk about celebrities and I'm like, I'm so sorry, like Joe Jonas, if you're listening. And then I'm like, I don't think Joe Jonas is listening to this.
One day they will be, I'm sure.
They will. So yeah, like a mixture between the two. I would love to be able to write in a way that is that funny and like that poignant and that thoughtful, and also be able to bring levity like Amelia de Moldenberg does, but have the integrity that she does.
Yeah.
And also be able to be silly, but also be like a professional that people really, really admire and respect with her own products and intellectual capital and all of those things. I would love that.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to do it.
I do say so myself. I meant about you. That was crazy. Not about. Well, I hope I.
No, that's exactly what you should say. You should say, I think so too. Like, that is what the confidence you need in order to like make it happen. And I truly do think that it's going to happen. And I think it's such a good idea. And everyone should go listen to it. You realize you haven't mentioned the name of your podcast.
Oh my God, I'm the worst. Yeah, it's called Stan. It is Stan. On wherever you get your podcasts. I am about to also I've started filming them because my YouTube algorithm is screaming at me, being like, oh my God, film your face. Just set up a little studio. I'm excited to host you there. But yes, it's called Stan and it's a very distinctive pink collage logo.
Love. Everyone go listen.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
I do want to turn and talk a little bit about some of your previous work. We've talked a little bit about how you've jumped around and you have some incredible experiences under your belt. So you worked at the UN. Can you talk? Why are you laughing?
No, I laugh. I laugh because it is quite insane. And I feel very happy to have done that.
It was so cool. It looked so cool. Can you tell us a little bit about what that work looked like?
Yeah, it was a very interesting, it was a project management role in the Office of Partnerships, but because the UN is structured the way that it is, and because of the role being what it was very ad hoc, and I did a million different things. One of my biggest things was I speech wrote for a lot of UN leadership. But then, you would go from one day doing that to the next day running errands around the UN complex because you have the security permissions to do that. I also was editing a lot of stuff that came out of the SDG studio, which was really cool. We were event planning and that was great. I will
That's
say
awesome.
About the Secretariat, which is the big building in New York, the HQ, and the offices that are held within that, is that the UN does really, really great work in its field offices. And I just felt, despite the fact that I was dispersing money and giving support to those kinds of people, like grassroots organizations, it felt really far removed from it. And even though I knew in my heart of hearts, you are doing good things, I guess in quite a selfish and narcissistic way, I was like, I would like to see the impact that it's having firsthand so that I know that I can have the pride in my work that I want to, especially with the controversies that the UN has been involved in the past about the disconnect between impact and investment and, all these well-laid plans going horribly awry. That was my one thing that I wish I had done a bit differently.
I mean, it sounds like an incredible job though, in that you got to experience so much and so many different things that How did you get that? Was this before? Because you went to grad school as well. Was this before or after your grad school?
So in grad school, I went to grad school in France. And a lot of times in France, what people do, like the French do and a lot of Europeans do, is that you can't get a job unless you have a master's. So a lot of Europeans go straight from their bachelor's to their master's, no break. And therefore, they don't have any work experience when they come out of it because they've just gone straight through. So they required, as part of my master's, because a lot of it was younger, to do 6 months of work experience in order to graduate. It was one of the graduation like requirements. So it's also crazy because I had applied for every single UN job that I've ever seen since, that I was like remotely eligible for since I was like 17, and wow, had never gotten it. It was such a huge dream of mine. And when I did get it, it was literally just like by applying online. And the lady who interviewed me eventually became my boss. I mean, I'm sure there are other reasons she picked up my resume, I hope. But she was like, oh, my name's Allegra, as we've established. And she was like, oh, that means happiness and charm and enthusiasm in Italian. And I was like, yeah, I'm aware. And she was like, oh, we need some more of that in the office. And like, you seem like a nice, competent person. So like, I guess you got the job. And I was like, oh. So if anyone's job searching out there and they're thinking like, oh my God, I didn't get it because I didn't do XYZ or I didn't put a bullet like it in my resume, I think you let that be your reminder. Please don't be like upset to hear that, because I was really bummed up. But I was like, let that be your reminder that sometimes it is just luck. And also, every application that you submit going up to the one that's accepted, you're learning something from. Like, I got accepted when I was 23, and I had been applying for 5-6 years. Yeah. So yeah, it really bummed me out at the time that was what she said, and maybe she was just trying to be funny, but yeah, it really like hurt my heart. And then when I got there, I was like, you know what, it all worked towards something. There was another reason why she, you know, but yeah, that's what she said in the interview.
Wow. I mean, I am so sure that there were other reasons that you got a job at the UN than just that. But that is such good advice, that you really never know why you don't get a job. And yeah, you can hum and haw and you can think about it and you can hark on it for so long, but you never know. And it is truly just out of your control. And I think that's honestly the worst part of job hunting, is that it's just all out of your control and you can only control the things you can. And yeah, other than that, it's up to the gods. But what a really cool experience. So why did you decide to go to grad school and grad school in France?
I think that there are so many reasons. There were a lot of personal reasons, like circumstantial reasons. But the semi-official answer, and the answer that I give in like interviews, is I had spent a year in Egypt leading up to grad school. So I graduated from undergrad and I moved to Cairo. And I think I was very much confronted with the reality that like I had had such a sheltered life growing up. I grew up in London and then I moved to New York and I went to an Ivy League school, and I had such clear values about like, or ideas about how the world should work and what's right and what's wrong. And then I moved to Egypt and I realized like I knew absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And it was really great. But I started to realize like I needed to have some more practical experience to know what I was dealing with. And then also as well at the same time, which is like the unofficial answer, but also like, you know, everybody, all my friends were moving on. I had broken up with my partner. I applied to grad school in a flurry and it just like all the stars aligned and it really seemed to make sense for me at the time. And in terms of France, it was just the best course that I could find. I studied human rights. I looked up the best schools for human rights and it was the first one that came up. So I was like, I'm going to apply here.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great method of finding your school. Why all the various locations? Like, what drove you to live in Egypt, live in France, live in because where you were, you said you were in Dubai. Is that where you were for consulting?
I was, yeah. I was in the UAE. So the trajectory has been London, New York, Cairo, Paris, Dubai, and now we don't know where the next one's going to be. I think for me, two reasons, like very early on, I realized, as much as I thought I knew that I had had a sheltered life when I got to Egypt, I was like, oh no, I'm really sheltered. But I knew that there was like a lot more to the world than I had been exposed to. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I knew I wanted to travel. And so I was like, rather than letting a job take me to a place, I was like, why don't I choose a place and find a job there? And essentially, I dated someone in college who was a bit older than me. He was not inappropriately older. He was just like a little bit older. And he graduated before I did. And he broke up with me because he said that he was starting a finance job. And he was like, and I just like don't have time for a girlfriend. And I was like, okay. I mean, he's like delusions of grandeur. And I think it's really indicative of like, you know, these kids come out of college and they get their first job and they pour so much importance into it. And now I know like he was probably just trying to find an excuse and whatever. And I used to tell younger girls in college when they were like, oh yeah, he's really busy with work right now. I was like, baby, he's not that busy. Like no one's that busy.
Yeah. No one's that busy. Yeah.
If someone's breaking up with you because they are working, like unless they're the president, like I don't, you know, he's just not the one for you. But because of that, I knew a lot of people who were a few years above in college. They all graduated. A lot of people from our college went into finance roles, and I would see them out on the town. And because I kind of peripherally knew them, and because I'm a girl, and because they'd been drinking or whatever, they would always take me aside and be like, I'm so unhappy. I graduated college. I thought I was, you know, I signed the big paycheck. Now I work my entire life. I never see my friends. I hate my job. And so that just gave me further confirmation that I was like, okay, this ain't it. So I applied to a bunch of different fellowships, got the fellowship in Cairo, took it. It got taken away because of COVID. And so I started applying to a bunch of other jobs. And I was thinking if I was going to move to Cairo, then I may as well just apply to a job in Cairo. And I got that job and it just seemed like the right thing to do. Then I got into grad school in Paris and I left for Paris. And then I missed the Middle East. Even though the Middle East isn't necessarily the correct term, but I missed the Middle East and I missed speaking Arabic and I missed the independence of like growing my own life and all the adventure that came with that. And so, but Cairo was having a really rough time. It's extremely difficult, especially when I knew that I wanted to move back to England to settle down eventually to start your career in Cairo because there aren't that many opportunities.
Yeah.
And the salary is very different. So I was like, where can I go that offers me the proximity to those things that I loved, but I can build a like stable future for myself, and ended up in the UAE.
That is so amazing. I wish I had that sense of adventure. I have been in London and then in New York and that is it. And that sounds awesome to be in all those places. I wish I could do that. And I just know myself and I know that I just am such a homebody. It's insane. So that is so, so unbelievably cool that you've had all such incredible experiences, even though your work in consulting in Dubai was not the best, still so cool.
Yeah, it was. And it gave me as well, like consulting, it gave me the opportunity to travel. So
yeah,
that was great. Yeah. And Dubai is close to things. So
yeah,
that's also
absolutely.
Cool. Yeah.
So looking back at your career so far, what would you say has been the biggest challenge that you have faced? And do you have any advice for people who to like combat those challenges and make sure that they can either face them or like kind of avoid them as much as possible?
I think we kind of touched on this before, but I think especially when you go to school and then you transition into being in a career. In school, things are very in your control. Like if I work hard, if I study, if I, you know, do all the right things, if I join this club, then I'm going to get all A's. And the connection between how hard you work and the output is usually very connected. And I think it's really difficult to know that you can go into a career and you can put your all into it, especially as we were saying in this economy, and then something can happen, like the company can go under, or the client can change their mind last minute, or, you know, you get put on a really horrible team, or there are so many variables, and learning not to take things personally at all, but also like being flexible to that is probably the best advice I can give, and like the biggest challenge to overcome that. But I'm still learning to take my own advice. So
as am I, but that is excellent advice and so true. It was such like almost a culture shock, but I don't know if that's the right word in terms of like, yeah, we've come from like one of the top schools and you did all the right things to do all the, to get all your successes. And then suddenly like that doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah,
is a hard pill to swallow. And then on the flip side of that, what's like been your proudest moment? I know careers are tough and there's a lot of turnover and all of that, but what's been the proudest moment you've had so far?
It's a really good question and really difficult to answer because I'm so hard on myself as a person and like don't allow myself to celebrate my wins, which is something that I'm like really trying to work on. But I think knowing, like being able to celebrate, being able to recognize how much progress there's been, even if it hasn't been linear, has been a huge highlight. So like, I don't know, I was at a party last week and I feel very disconnected in a very sad way from Egypt and the UAE and blah, blah. I was at a party last week and I was wearing a shirt that had Arabic on it. And someone asked me what it meant. And then I was like, oh, it means this. And then I was ended up being in the smoking area of this club, teaching people how to read Arabic. And I was off, you know, using my shirt as a, you know, I was showing them the letters of the alphabet and stuff. These poor people were so indulgent. I'm sure they were like, please, I just wanted a cigarette and to leave. But I was like, a captive audience, my favorite.
Love, yeah.
But I think like I said before, like everything that you do is building up to something. And even if it doesn't feel like it's linear, in a more like related to professional way, for instance, like I was freelancing, I'm doing a completely different role than consulting. And she asked me to put a deck together. And if you're unfamiliar with consulting, it is literally just making PowerPoint decks all day, like making them beautiful, you know, including the right information, making graphs, blah, blah. She left for 5 minutes and she came back and she was like, what the fuck happened? And I was like, oh my God, I forgot to tell you that this used to be my job for like 2 years. So like in a good way, she was like, what the fuck? That's crazy. I thought,
yeah.
So even though for me, like it's because of the way that my brain works, I'm like, I'm not a consultant anymore. And I've just lost 2 years of my life to a career that I'm never going to have. Realizing that you have so many transferable skills, like that's a good highlight, I guess. Thematic highlight.
Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you for talking us through your journey. And I promise I will let you go soon. I just want to do one final round of questions. And these will be really, really quick. Kind of like rapid fire, if that is okay. Yeah. So starting with best piece of advice for those on the job hunt.
Oh, God. It only takes one yes. So stay strong. It feels like it's a horrible numbers game and like you're losing, but really the odds are stacked in your favor. It takes one yes.
Love it. Best piece of advice for those who have difficult managers. We talked a little bit about that.
Oh God, so many pieces of advice. Gather a paper trail, 100%. HR is not your friend, but you do need to tell them and realize it's about something else. This person is unhappy in their life. It's not because you know, sneezed that they shouted at you. It's because they're sad. Like, try not to take it personally.
Yeah. Oh, the hardest thing. But yes, so true. One thing you need to get through the workday.
A good gossip with a coworker.
So true. Love that. Favorite way to shut off your mind at the end of the workday?
Charcoal drawing. Ooh, charcoal covers a multitude of sins. It looks so much more difficult. It's actually a lot easier.
Best career advice you have ever been given.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up because I have such a good one. My mentor, my first internship, told me people notice when you, because they were trying to talk about return offers. He said they notice when you stay behind and help other interns in your cohort. And people, especially in America, no offense, but especially in America, people think it's a competition. It gets very sharp elbows, sharp whatever. Just know that your career is a marathon and people remember how you made them feel. And even if it's not, even if they don't need a favor from you, in 30 years, they're probably going to ask for you to give their child an internship or, you know, an introduction. And you're going to base that decision off of how they made you feel when you were an intern struggling. So just like be nice and kind to everybody and make everybody feel important.
Absolutely. And yes, that something like that just recently happened to me. Crazy story, but so,
God, I really
so agree.
Am I allowed to ask her? No.
I'll tell you. I'll tell you once we stop recording. But like something like that just happened. And yeah, it bit some people on the butt. But anyway, so yes, could not agree more with that advice. And then last rapid fire question, what would be three words that you would say to your college self?
You'll be fine. Like you'll be, it's going to be fine. I mean, you'll be fine is three words, but like it's all, nothing is the end of the world. I said earlier in this podcast, like I was crying about some final exam, cannot even remember what exam it was. Like you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Ugh, the amount of time I spent crying in college is just truly
insane.
Ridiculous.
Like it's and everything feels so, and right now, like I'm in the middle of my job hunt, everything feels so difficult, but I've been here before. I'll probably be here again. You're going to be fine.
It's going to be fine. Totally. All right. Well then final question for you. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I've so appreciated, but final question. For you, Allegra, what's next?
Hopefully becoming Amelia de Moldenberg / David Starrs.
Yes, that's it. Oh my gosh, mic drop, we're done.
Cut to the music.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. Well, yes, I think that's the perfect what's next. And I can't wait for that to happen for you.
Oh my gosh,
because it will.
I'll let you know. You'll be the first to know.
I'll see you on the screens. That's how I'll know. Yeah. Like, I'll see your content just, you know, rising and going viral and all of this. So that's how I'll know. Well, amazing. Thank you again. I have so enjoyed this. And yeah, everyone go listen to Stan wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcast. And thank you so much for having me.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.